basically the conversation was, okay, they were going to run sprint out pick. So if they're going to run that play, we can defend that play. We called a different defense. So instead of running a blitz man coverage, we played zone coverage. So that kind of reshifted where our defenders were kind of distributed. And then, so we were in a much, if they had called the second play first, they would have scored on that quarterback outside zone. Cause I think they would have had the angles, but because our defensive coordinator, and credit to Coach Cushing, he didn't want it, knowing what they were trying to do, being in man wasn't the greatest. If they're going to throw, we wanted to be more in a zone. And, but then they ended up running the quarterback outside zone, and our guys made a great play. Freshman, we had freshman corner, Naz Gene Lubin from Freeport, you know, made the tackle, and the rest. I was panicked after that because our hands team had to go out and recover. And
Welcome back to another episode of Not Even D2. Rudy, we took a week break, so haven't really gotten to talk to you in a few weeks. So how you doing, bro?
I'm chilling, man. Chilling. The season's right around the corner, basically. We're starting to play scrimmages and stuff like that. So it's an exciting time. And we had midterms, so those are looking pretty good, too. So
yeah.
Can't really complain right now, bro. Life is good. How are you, bro?
I'm chilling. Since I was just looking, like, because we've been grinding. Since we dropped the episode February 8th, it's been 36 straight weeks of dropping an episode, bro. That is insane. Almost 8 months of just consistently dropping, which is fire, bro. I appreciate what you've been doing, and obviously I respect what I've been doing, as weird as that sounds. But, I mean, we got a really good episode today. Coach Kurt Fitzpatrick, Cortland football head coach, coming off a national championship in 2023, where he was also Division III Coach of the Year, and now he's leading one of the best teams in the country. They're currently ranked number 2 in the country behind North Central, who they defeated last year in the national championship. And I mean, we had a really good conversation about Coach Fitzpatrick's career, Cortland football, Cortland as a university. So I just want to hear a little about your thoughts about this episode.
I thought it was a great episode. I thought it was a great conversation just about, you know, like you said, his career. So he started at St. John's Fisher as a QB. And he started as a backup QB at Fisher, right? And he kind of worked his way into the spotlight there, where at the end of his career, he now holds a bunch of different records at St. John's Fisher. So that says enough about who he is as a person, right? And then, you know, working from there to a coach at Fisher, then Utica, and Morrisville, then Cortland, like just to hear his journey, I think was really cool. And I think especially like Cortland football is like at this point in our time is like the upper echelon probably for Division III football.
OD.
Right. I mean, obviously they won the national championship. So it's like to hear how he goes about building a culture and his process with, you know, building plays or his relationship with his teammates, you know, I think it's just really good to hear for us. And also just the audience, too. So I thought it was a great episode, bro. Coach Fitzpatrick is a great guy. And I'm glad we got him on.
Yeah, definitely glad. Shout out to Cole Burgess for patching us in, too. We've been wanting to get Coach Fitzpatrick on the pod for quite some time. So that was big time by Cole. But Coach Fitzpatrick, like everything he said on the episode, it's not like just for show. He was talking about how like they constantly have to get better week by week. And I was announcing the Alfred football versus Cortland football game, and I was just impressed at all the schemes they're running, their defense. They were getting a lot of stops, hurrying the quarterback, throwing deep balls. It was a really fun game to watch by Cortland. And after the game, Coach Fitzpatrick and I, we were talking, and I was like, what you think about like how the team did today? And it was like, well, we got to do this better. We struggled doing this. And I was like, dude, you just won like 59-17. It's crazy. But they really just try to be perfect at everything that they do, and that's proven to be beneficial for them so far. I mean, leading the country or third in the country in scoring offense, scoring over 55 points per game. And that's a lot to do with Coach Fitzpatrick's offense. We talked about it in the episode, but they stretch the defense out, and this allows Zach Boyce, who's having a wonderful career, but an extremely special season so far. And, I mean, they're just a really good football team. I was looking. Coach Fitzpatrick hasn't lost a game in the Empire since he's been here. And the Empire is a good football conference, too. So it's crazy. But One thing I wanted to talk about with you, bro, is like, I feel we talked about this in a few episodes with Coach McGinnis and Coach Reginiak about how like the Division III model is supposed to not really like push wins and losses or push athletics. Like the main priority is to be a student first. And Coach Fitzpatrick, he said like at Cortland, not just their football program, but the whole department, athletic department, they want to win. That's the main priority. And I just wanted to, I don't think we ever put our opinions as a student athlete. Like, are you at school? Are you favoring school? Do you care about the wins and losses? Talk to me about what you think the athletic department should be focused on as a school.
Well, all right. So I think this is a good conversation, right? So I think the first point that I think that I talked about with someone the other day that I wanted to bring up is one, with the era of NIL in college basketball, especially Division I sports, and where now you're hearing where players will legit walk away from schools if they're not getting paid enough, right? Mm-hmm. Division III is now becoming that like true college basketball or college sport like dynamic where it's like you're not getting paid to play. Like you're going there to become a student athlete and represent your school, right? So I think Division III has now become that division. And it's slowly but surely, I feel like in the public, they're going to realize it. So that's the first point that I want to bring up. And then when you talk about what are you favoring wins and losses, I think that for me, my 3 years at Utica, right? So my freshman year, we won 20 games. Sophomore year, 20 plus games. Third year, 20 plus games. But there's other teams around like in the athletic department that don't have that type of success, right? And yeah, they may be great students, and that's good. It's good to be a great student. But at the end of the day, you always hear a lot of the conversations like, damn, I wish I had a coach like Coach Coffey because how he runs the program, right? How he has us at how hard that we go in the weight room, right? How we have, you know, how some of the players get in and put in extra work and just that culture of winning that we have here. Like that, to me, like, you should want to go to the NCAA tournament and experience that as a student athlete at your school, because that is like a once in a lifetime experience, just like being there. So I definitely think that for me personally, like, although yes, I do focus on school, at the end of the day, I do take like that process of trying to win games and being a part of a culture very serious. So.
Yeah. I definitely like that. The initial point you brought up about like Division III is the most pure right now of like hoopers or football players. They're just going to that school just to play the sport, not for money, not for any spotlight. It's just because I want to get better and I want to compete. But I mean, you kind of touched on this at the end of the episode. Like a lot of Division III schools are okay with being like okay. And I feel like that's just a disservice to all the kids going there because yeah. Like, for example, I'm not picking Alfred coming out of high school to like go to a team that's going to win 10 games a year. Like I picked this school because I want to win. I came majority to play basketball. So if I go, not that Alfred does this, but if I go to a school and we're fine with just being okay and finishing fourth in the Empire A, which we're not, but it's like, that's not really what I'm here to go to school for. And I respect every program that, you know, trying to build a culture, trying to get good guys in the program that are going to do the right things. But at the end of the day, also, like, these coaches, this is how they feed their families. And sometimes it's determined by these wins and losses. So I feel like athletic departments, if you're not focused on winning, then you're doing a disservice not only to yourself, but everybody in your university. Because, like, Coach Fitzpatrick talked about it. Like, when we win national championships or we're playing in Cortica, that only helps our university bring in more kids, bring in more enrollment, all of that. So why are we not focused on winning? It's definitely an interesting conversation just about how Division III has been a traditionally the model of, you know, you're a student first and then the athlete second. But I think times are kind of changing and people are wanting to be the best at what they do. And they're coming to these schools to win, not just to like enjoy their time playing a sport.
100%.
But, yeah. And then, you know, Coach Fitzpatrick, really, really good coach. I already said this, but I can really see them going back to back. Like I said, they're ranked second in the country right now, but scoring at an insane rate, holding teams to below 10 points per game, which is OD. Like you're getting scored on every single drive, and then you can't score on the other end. It's really tough to play against them. And we talked about a lot with Coach Fitzpatrick regarding, you know, that whole run, the 2023 run, winning the national championship, what it's like for him seeing his guys like Cole Burgess or J.J. Lapp playing the NFL. Definitely great stories we got from him. And then finally, like, what his expectations are coming into this year with a high-powered offense with a bunch of skilled guys on the defensive end. Really good conversation. Hope you enjoyed the episode. Oh, yeah, and also Cordica, I'm there too. Shout out to Mr. Ilya. I hope I'm saying your name right, but definitely appreciate you getting me those media passes. I'll be at Cordica locked in. So let's get it, and let's hear from Coach Fitzpatrick. All right, we are here with Coach Fitzpatrick. How you doing today, Coach?
I'm doing great. How you guys doing?
Can't complain, Coach. It's a pretty good day. Appreciate you. I know you're coming off a bye week, so appreciate your time. You know, yeah. I know you're probably preparing for a game on Saturday, but appreciate this.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Yeah. So we're recording a Friday before you guys got Mooresville tomorrow. And, I mean, Empire plays, there's a lot of really good teams. I was kind of wondering, as a coach, are you, like, switching how you go through practice that week when conference matchups come about, or are you adding schemes for different Empire matchups? Just talk to me about, like, what changes going into conference play.
Our schedule stays pretty much the same. We have a very routine schedule. Like, our practice plans, every Tuesday is the same, every Wednesday is the same, you know, different situations and periods and all that stuff. The length of practice doesn't really change. The thing with conference play is just the familiarity with the opponents, because you play them every year. So, mm-hmm. You know, and for me, I played or coached at 4 of the 7 teams in our league. So it's, you know, you get to know, and everyone has wrinkles, have wrinkles every year, but you get to know the opponents and the coach, really the coaches, because the players change, obviously. Mm-hmm. But the opponents or the coaches, you get to know the coaches, and they get to know me over the years. So, we try not to do anything really, really different, you know, conference play. That's why conference games, usually teams in conference play, you get closer games, because there's just so much crossover, yeah, and familiarity that, yeah, the game is usually a little tighter.
So I'm just kind of wondering this, Coach, like, you were a student athlete yourself at St. John's Fisher, which is another school in the Empire 8. So I'm just kind of wondering, and maybe this might be skipping ahead a little bit, but do you feel like, because you were a student athlete, that sometimes helps you understand some of your players and what they're going through, like, early on in the school semester?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely understand it more than if I wasn't hadn't played myself. That was a long time ago. Now it's, you know, 20 years ago was my senior year in college. So, you know, but definitely, I think, like, I was a quarterback, and, like, I was a backup quarterback for multiple years before I got the chance to play. So, like, my experience, I think, helps me kind of mentor some of my players who aren't playing as freshmen, who don't get the playing time. You know, they come from being the best player on their high school team to only being a scout team player. And we have some really talented young guys. Just, we have a talented team. It's hard to crack through. So I think that part of my experience helps me as a coach, because I can relate to what they're going through and what they're feeling, the frustration and all that, but also understand that if you work hard and stick with it, you'll become a better person and a better player, and will likely get the chance to contribute to our team. You know, if you quit now, none of those things are ever going to happen. So, you know, I do feel like my experience, it helps me a lot as a coach. Also, you know, they come to me, they know I'm not going to feel sorry for them, because I was in their juice. So they're not going to come to me. I don't mind if they come to me frustrated with their role and, like, lack of playing time or whatever, but I'm not going to feel sorry for them, because that's not what this is about.
So I want to talk more about this. Like you said, you played cute. You were quarterback at St. John's Fisher, and you graduated in 2004, and you had a great career there. I mean, just looking at some of your accomplishments, you set school passing records and touchdown with 30, and school passing records with yards as well, with 2,336 passing yards. And you led the program to a 10-2 overall record and a Sweet 16 appearance. So just a decorated career that you had there. So I just want to hear about just some of your favorite memories, like playing college football.
You know, a lot of the memories are like locker room. In the locker room, you know, the buses after game, staying in the hotel with your buddies. You know, definitely some memories on the field for sure. But a lot of the best parts of being a college athlete is just being a part of something. You know, the group of friends you make, the bonds you make. And we had some great games. Fisher, when my buddies and I were freshmen, was coming off a 1-9 year. Fisher was like basically the worst Division III program in the state of New York. And then we slowly got better and better and better. Coach Fagiano at Utica, he was the defensive coordinator at that time. So, you know, and he was a really good recruiter and like was a young, energetic, vibrant coach. And you know, Coach Vosberg was the head coach. He's still their head coach at Fisher to this day. He's been there a long time. And we just got better and better and better. So like that year, my last year when we had a lot of success, and that was our first time winning the conference. It was our first time we beat Ithaca for the first time in school history. Ithaca was in the Empire Eight at that time. You know, won a playoff game, 31-0. We beat Muhlenberg. Like, so there's some on the field moments. Like we had some big moments. But there's nothing like, you know, winning a game and then being able to hang out with your friends afterwards. And like that's the times in the locker room, the celebrations, like that, that's what I think really sticks with me.
So you mentioned that you were a backup quarterback for some time. So I'm just kind of curious, like what kept you motivated? Like, how did you just stick to it? Like, okay, stacking days, like how did, like, what was your mindset during that time?
Yeah, it wasn't easy to do. People know me, I'm a super competitive person. Like I, you know, maybe even that even came back to haunt me sometimes when I was a teenager, like, you know, I do some things I wasn't proud of because I lost the game or lost playing pickup basketball or, you know, like I want to win everything. So that's kind of how I am. So it was hard early. Like I didn't handle it great. I had never been on a football team where I wasn't the starting quarterback from the time I was in flag football all the way up through high school. I'd never been anything but the starting quarterback. So it's a big adjustment. And, And another freshman quarterback that was recruited the same year that I was the starting quarterback as a freshman. Ooh. And he was talented, you know, but like as an 18-year-old, you don't see that. It's hard to empathize with and see the situation zoomed out and realize that he's better than I was. And, you know, so for the first year, it was tough. Now, you know, so I was, you know, get disgruntled but I was never, I'm never one to quit. So I was never gonna do that. And eventually, once I started being input focused and not output focused, that's a phrase that I use with my team like daily now. Once I didn't see it in those terms back then, but once I stopped thinking about myself and started thinking about the team and like, okay, my role is the backup quarterback and I just tried to get better and, you know, and I embraced my role, then I started to get better as a player. And now once I got my chance to play, now I was ready to play. So a lot of times, you know, if I would have stayed focused on the outputs that I wasn't getting and, you know, probably because my expectations were unrealistic. And I was just in a cycle of negativity and that would have held me back. And I probably wouldn't be the head coach of Cortland right now, 20 years later, had I not adjusted my thinking and my mindset. But yeah, so I feel like because I embraced my role and I started thinking about the team, putting the team first, I ended up getting a lot better and developing as a quarterback. So when I got the chance to play, I was able to play as good as I could.
One conversation that I hear from a lot of different coaches is like, don't let your role identify who you are as a person. Like, yeah. I hear that a lot from different coaches. So definitely that mindset that you're talking about, be input focused rather than output focused. I really like that a lot.
Yeah, thank you.
But I want to hear, so I go to Utica University right now, and yep. You coached at Utica for some time, and you were the offensive coordinator and the QB coach at Utica.
So I want to hear first, like, your time at Utica, your experience coaching with Coach Fagiano, and also, like I said, you were a quarterback yourself at St. John's Fisher. So just how you built your relationships with the quarterbacks and also with the offense at Utica.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, I was there 5 years, 2008. So Coach Fagiano, when he got hired in like right around Christmas time in December in 2007, I would say, and right at the end of the 2007 year. I was on staff at Fisher with him for the previous 2 years. After I graduated from playing, I was the quarterback coach at Fisher. So he got hired and offered me the job to come with him. So I was there for Coach Fagiano's first 5 years. I was coaching under him as the offensive coordinator, and it was definitely a build at that time. You know, we had some talented guys, which was fun. There some guys that were fun to coach. But it was definitely, especially offensively, most of the talent was on defense. And Utica at that time, they had a really good defensive team. And offensively, we had to take our lumps and kind of build. And so the first year it wasn't pretty. And I wasn't really ready to be a coordinator either. I was learning just as much as the players were. But the thing that Coach Fagiano, what he did that probably allowed me to grow is he kind of left me alone. And just, he was a defensive coach and he let me run the offense. So he let me make mistakes. He let me fail. You know, we weren't, it was probably a blessing that we weren't great as a team anyway. So the expectations weren't super high. It's not like we were a top 25 team and we had to like keep up this super high standard. We just had to focus on recruiting and building and growing. And so, and we did. I feel like on offense, we got better every year that I was there, and we recruited a quarterback named Andrew Banquet from Amerenek, New York. And so we started him as a true freshman in 2009, our second year. And he ended up being the best quarterback in the program history. By the time he graduated, he was the Empire 8 Offensive Player of the Year his senior year in 2012. And just a great, great person. And like, he's the type of QB that like, you'd want to like be the face of the franchise. You know, he's the guy that you wanted to do all the media interviews. You wanted him on campus community service events, like, and he was a great QB. So he was fun to coach, you know, and like, as coaches, we all owe so much to the players that help us, you know, that we help them, they help us. It's kind of the two-way street, but like Banquet and the way that he played and the way he developed, you know, that offense helped me get the job at Morrisville as the head coach. And then those guys at Morrisville helped me get the job at Cortland. So, you know, we owe a lot to the guys like Andrew, some of the receivers. We had some super talented players back in those days, you know. And, you know, our team, we were kind of a middle of the road team in the Empire 8. We could beat anybody, but we could also lose to anybody. But it was a lot of really good times. You know, Coach Fagiano is a great coach to work for. So he's very supportive, you know, how he treats his staff, family atmosphere. You know, I probably gained 30 pounds there from all the Italian food and some of the stuff. You know, there was always food around.
All the Riggies, Coach.
The Riggies, the tomato pie, and all that stuff. But it was really, 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 really fond memories. And, like, I learned how to coach at Utica, not just because of – you know, because I got to be able to do it on my own and got a chance to screw up a bunch and learn and grow. It was a great kind of a great period for me. And, you know, I think we did a good job, and obviously we built the program from scratch, and now they're a really good team. So,
yeah, definitely cherish that moment. And I like how you mentioned that, like, in the Empire 8, at Utica, you guys like were in the middle where you could lose to anyone but also beat anyone. I think that's pretty interesting, because I feel like it's the same today, like in the Empire for football and basketball. Like, the teams in the middle are like, they can beat the best teams, but they also lose to the best teams. There's a lot of like continuity in the Empire, so I like that you brought that up. But
yeah,
I mean, I want to talk about you taking the job at Morrisville. You spent 7 seasons there. And Morrisville was transitioning from like a JUCO into a Division III school. So that brings its own challenges. But you really like shifted their culture and their program in general. I mean, 2014, the NJAC Coach of the Year, you guys won the NJAC that year. And then now, like, you built that program enough to where they're one of the better teams in the Empire 8 today. So I just want to talk about, like, what you were doing initially in that process, building the culture, and some of your favorite moments coaching at Morrisville.
Really, I think Morrisville, you know, it was like I was 30 years old when I got that job, I think. And, like, I was head coach for the first time. And just like when I became a coordinator with Coach Fagiano, I wasn't looking back on it. There's no way I was ready. No way I was ready to be a head coach, but you just get the job and then you just figure it out. You put one foot in front of the other and just go get it. But Morrisville, like, the thing about that place is that you could get some super talented athletes. And we had some talented guys, like, right away in my first year there in 2013. You know, we had some talent, and most of it was on the offensive side of the ball. So we had some work to do to kind of spread our talent out onto both sides. But some of those guys on offense, Lamar Johnson, Josh Powell, Christian Pena, like, some guys that were, like, all-timer players for me. Like, there are some players on that team that are, you know, that are the best guys that I've ever had at those mm-hmm. positions. There's some stud players. The thing, you know, I think my competitiveness, my competitive spirit, the whole thing about Morrisville was, like, they didn't think they could win. And mm-hmm. that's a problem,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so to me, it was like, with our staff in that first year, we went 3-7, but we beat Rowan. Rowan was, like, the team in the NJAC, and, like, we beat them at home bad. We smoked them. And my thing to our staff, I think that year was, I don't care whether we win or lose the games, it doesn't matter. Like, obviously it matters, but it is going to be what it's going to be. But we're going to have a plan to win the games. Like, when we put in the game plan, it's not going to be to keep it close. It's not going to be to, hey, let's just make sure we keep the ball in front of us and, you know, let's run it a lot so we don't turn it over. Like, no, we're going to have a plan to win the game. And, like, we're going to have everything we can do to win. We're not trying to keep it close. We're not trying to, you know, lose with dignity. Like, we're trying to win. And if we lose bad and it comes back to bite us, whatever, but we're going to go down swinging. We're not going to go down trying to walk, you know, we're going to try to hit a home run. And I think the kids just love that. They fully bought into that and they had the talent. So, you know, we were able to score some points and then the second year there, when we won, we were co-champions at the NJAC. And we got to our first ever postseason game and beat Utica, ironically, in a bowl game that year. Like, we were able to get develop some defensive players, and, like, that team was such a fun team to coach because they were fearless. Like, they were exactly the type of team that you want to coach, because, like, they didn't give a crap. You know, they didn't care who was on the other side of the field. They felt like they were going to win. Our quarterback Lamar Johnson was a stud player. I mean, just unbelievable. You look at his numbers. I don't know what his numbers were off the top of my head in that year, but he rushed for 1,200 yards. He threw for 2,500 yards. He was everything. He was one of the best players in the country. And it's funny, the timing of this podcast. Like, last weekend, Morrisville had their homecoming, and the 2014 team, it's now been 10 years since that team. That team was inducted into their Hall of Fame last week, and we were on a bye, so I was able to go back and go to that ceremony last Friday night, and just to see all those guys, the key players on that team, were back, and I hadn't seen some of those guys in forever. Just cool memories, you know, just a great accomplishment, you know, seeing what they're doing with their lives and the successes that they're having. It was cool to see.
This is kind of like a sidestep from, like, the overall conversation, Coach, but do you feel like that's one of, like, the joys of being a head coach, like, seeing your players, like, down the line, like, damn, man, these guys are now adults with kids, married, like, good jobs. Is that, like, part of the, I don't know, like, the good feelings you get as a coach?
It is. And, like, when I was coaching them at that time, I didn't see it like that because, like, I was so young. I was so young myself. Like, I told them last Friday, like, I was their age when I was coaching them back in 2014. That kind of blew their mind, you know, because they all see me as, like, you know, as you know, the head coach, it's like an older person. I was 30. Now they're 30, 31 years old too. So it was, it is cool. It's very, there's a lot of pride in that. Seeing your players, you know, take some of the lessons that you hopefully taught them and, you know, some of the lessons they learned, not that their coach taught them, but just that football or sports in general, teaches you. If you can play any college sport for 4 years, then you can handle adversity. You can learn a lot through that. And so, yeah, there is a lot of pride in that.
So now, you know, you like KJ said, you were there for about 7 years at Morrisville. You got the job in 2020 for SUNY Cortland. Yeah. So I'm just kind of curious, like, what were the emotions like, one, stepping away from Morrisville, but also like, how did that opportunity for Cortland like open up for you?
Well, Cortland, it opened up because the previous head coach, Dan McNeil, who was here at Cortland for 23 years, he retired. And so the minute that I found out that he was retiring, Cortland was always this school, like, you play them. They were in the NJAC at the time. So we played them in the NJAC, and then we both, Morrisville and Cortland, went to the Empire Eight. I had friends that went to Cortland back in the day. And so, like, Cortland to me was always this, you go play at Cortland and the facilities are Division I caliber. You know, it's a great college town. You hear about Cortica, like how seriously Cortland treats athletics. And it's like that, this to me was a school that was like one of the top athletic departments in general, not just football, but just in general athletic. You think of athletics. Athletics is what Cortland is known for. And so, you know, I was highly interested in this job. And I talked earlier about how players kind of help you get good players, have success, and help you get your next job. And we at Morrisville, we were able to beat Cortland in 2014 and 2015, back-to-back years, those years. And like, our athletic director here at Cortland, Mike Ertz, you know, those games, how we played in those games made an impression on him. And so when the job opened and, you know, there was a lot of alumni, Cortland alums, we have a ton of alumni who are in coaching and athletics. That's just the kind of majors that we have here. So there was a lot of alumni interest, and I was the only non-alum that was a finalist for the job. And thankfully, Mr. Ertz, our athletic director, had the guts to hire me. I'm thankful he did, because he was getting a lot of pressure otherwise. And you know, so that's kind of how it all worked out. It's funny how it worked. It was tough to leave Morrisville. You know, telling the team, that was really the first time I'd ever had to do that. And the news had leaked before I got to tell them in person, which I'm
dang,
you know, with social media and stuff, it leaked from Cortland's program out. So our players knew before I got the chance to tell them. So that didn't make it easy. But when I had to leave, I walked out of my office at Morrisville in tears. Just because I felt like I had built, you know, my staff and I, that was like my baby, you know, like we had built that from the bottom and built a respected program. And so, you know, it was hard, but to me, it was a no-brainer to get the opportunity to be a coach at Cortland. I don't love Division I football. So like, I'm a Division III guy. So like, to me, Cortland is where you'd want to be if you were going to coach Division III football. And so this is a special place. And so it was tough to leave, but I was excited to get here and try to build a championship caliber program.
Yeah. I just want to bring up something that you mentioned, like Cortland, it's not just like a football program that sets you guys apart. It's like the whole athletic department. So like, we had Coach Axtell, the soccer coach, mm-hmm. on the podcast, and he was talking about this culture and like how like it's a group full of alphas. All you coaches are alphas, and like it drives him because he doesn't want to be left behind seeing all your success that you guys are doing in other sports. So it just like continues to drive everyone. So that's really important that it's not talked about enough. The whole athletic department needs to be involved, not just one specific.
It's definitely true. Like the last 2 years, every fall sport has made the NCAA tournament during the fall season. And that's just the fall. In the spring, you know, baseball, softball, lacrosse, men's and women's lacrosse are all very strong. Wintertime, our women's basketball program has been really strong. Mm-hmm. You know, I think our men's basketball program is getting better and better with Coach Mo. We have the term alpha. Like, I do think we have a lot of type A personality that comes. Our athletic director is like that. The thing that I loved about him and about any coach at Cortland, winning is important, and they're not afraid to say that. Our president, mm-hmm. Sometimes in college athletics, it makes me mad when it's like, oh, it's not about the winning, it's about the experience. But like, to me, screw that. Like, the winning, I want all the other stuff too, but winning is important. And we want to win. And if you don't win, that's a disappointment. That doesn't mean you have to ignore the values and the, you know, being great citizens and being great students. And we do all that too, but we're here to win. If we didn't play games, I wouldn't be a football coach. You know, like you want to win. We're competitors. So, and that's kind of what it's like at Courtland, in like Coach Axtell was alluding to, like winning is important. And when you're the program that doesn't win your conference, it sticks out because a lot of the other programs are. And so it creates a level of intensity, you know. Not there's no rivalries within our department, but you definitely want to hold up your end of the bargain for sure.
Yeah. So I want to talk about like Courtland's offense as a whole, and watching you guys play is really a joy. Like I respect the philosophy and scheme you're running. You're running four verts, and it seems like a lot of time you're airing the ball out, giving your quarterbacks a lot of confidence. But it's also like interesting that you're saying like at Utica, that's kind of your play style, or at Morrisville, you had a Lamar who, and I was just watching some of his film, like he was airing it out as well. So I'm just kind of curious, like each year at Courtland, it seems like you're breaking offensive school records and passing yards, passing touchdowns. And now obviously we know Zach Boyce is doing. So I was just wondering where you got this like philosophy of airing it out, or this four vertical concept.
I don't know where I think it's just kind of my personality as a former quarterback. Coaches that I've learned from, four verticals is the first play that we put in every spring, every fall camp. It's like, that's our bedrock. You know, we play tomorrow, I'll probably call four verticals 10 times. One out of every seven plays. It's an aggressive approach, but I think that's where you got to start if you want to play great offense. Being able to stress the defense down the field is important, because I think that sets up everything else. It sets up any other, you know, intermediate short concepts that you want to, it sets up your running game, you know, it sets up a lot. So, you know, to me that fits my personality. I think, you know, we're our offense, like if I had to put it into boxes, we're like, our offense is like, it's probably air raid. If you're familiar with air raid, the air raid terminology, like we're an air raid passing game with a lot of spread option principles in the running game. So when we kind of like try to blend them all together. And we've been kind of building, and from the years that I spent as an assistant at Fisher, now to, you know, when I was an OC for Coach Fagiano, and learning what works and what doesn't work. And then, you know, over the years, you just figured out what I liked. And then you always just try to fit that to your players too. So a lot of it in football, there's a lot of great plays, but a lot of it, when you drill down when you focus on the small stuff, it's a lot of the details and the technique and all that stuff. So that's important too, you know, building quarterbacks, like putting in scheme where you're going to get receivers open, and then coaching the quarterbacks so that their read progression is, their eyes are on the space that the receiver is going to break into at the right time. That's hard to do in football, and it takes a lot of practice, and it's being a young coordinator, it's very hard to do that, especially, you know, I'm fortunate that I was a quarterback. So you can have a feel for what, when you're asked the quarterback to make this throw or make this read, or I have some sort of a feeling of like what it's like to have stood in the pocket and how hard that is sometimes. And so I think that experience has helped me coach quarterbacks and build offense, and, you know, and then just figure out as you go as an OC, you got to figure out your play calling style. You know what, and a lot of it is feel. Like, I don't have a call sheet. I don't write my plays out in the call sheet. I just have like formation boxes with just concept words, and then I just call the plays. So I don't read anything off my call sheet. Just plays that just, you know, I just fill in the play calls from my brain as I call them out there. Because I think I don't want to be a robot. I want to, you know, it's fun to be in the game and just to react and call the game. And when you have good players, they make you look smart a lot. And that's to have a lot of those guys here at Courtland now. So they make me look good.
So it's funny you bring this up, because it's like when I looked at Utica and like your time there, like you had a lot of like different all league and all American players on the roster, even like with off on the offense too and defense. So I'm just kind of curious, like, and also with Zach Boyce, like your quarterback, like, what are the conversations look like? Like, how is he helping you, like, because I hear about sometimes a quarterback will help the coach like maybe understand what they're seeing in their progressions. Yeah. So how are your players like helping you understand what they're seeing, and like what does that dynamic look like between you and them?
Yeah, I'm always asking Zach for feedback. I think that's big one. I want to call plays that he is confident in too. Like, I never want to get to a point where I call something and he's like, oh shit, you know, he called that play. Like, I want him to have confidence in the call. So if there's ever anything that he hates, I want to hear that feedback. And then the plays that he loves, I like to call those plays. If I think, hopefully we agree that they're both good plays for the team we're playing, and I want to call those as much as possible. But I also think as a coach, having player feedback, if your players feel empowered to make suggestions, then and like they make a suggestion, and if I think it's good, not to have the kind of the ego to say like, oh no, you know, we're doing it my way. Like, if they make a good suggestion, then use it, because the next time you will make a suggestion to them, they're going to be bought into that too. It's a two-way street. You know, here's a good one in the Stag Bowl last year at halftime. So we were behind 7-3, and we had just kicked the field goal, and we get in the ball to start the second half. So at halftime, Cole Burgess, our stud receiver, who's now on the Cincinnati Bengals practice squad. My boy. Yeah, he was in the locker room. You know, he felt like he could win on a post corner route on there. And when we got into the red zone, he feels like he could win on a post corner. So he said, look, if you get down the red zone, it's a concept we call go-go lightning. So go-go is like the structure, and then lightning is a post corner in our offense. That's the term for that. So So we first drive of the third quarter, we get down into the red zone, and I called go-go lightning, and he got open, made the catch for a touchdown. It was real ruled incomplete, and then we were playing with replay, and
he got the foot down, yeah.
overturned it. So that was a play that he called. Now, it was a play. It's not like we drew it up in the dirt. Like, it was a play that we already ran, and it wasn't really in the game plan. But at halftime, it was him saying, you know, coach, if we get down there, if we call this play, I will get open. And so now when I get down there and call it, like, in my mind, he's got no choice. Like, he told me to call it. And Cole's a stud player, so I knew he could physically do it. But, you know, he was going to be fully bought into winning that route because it was basically his play call. And so when you can give players feedback like that, and Zach does this all the time at QB, you know. But they also know sometimes I might not use their suggestion. But if you are open to it, then I think that helps them get bought into what you're doing. And it just makes the relationship that much better.
100%, coach. I definitely agree with that. You know, when we, you know, here at Utica, like, Coach Coffee sometimes, like, he'll ask us, like, you know, what do we want to do? Like, are we going to trap this player? Like, how do you want to ice this ball screen? Like, what are you guys thinking? Or even in the timeouts, so we're like, hey, like, we might have to, like, guys, like, what are you guys thinking? And sometimes Coffee will overrule what we say. He's like, nah, yes, I disagree. Like, but like you said, it builds that trust and also that buy-in. Like, all right, our coach is hearing us and he's listening to us, and we also are hearing him and listening to him. So definitely see what you're saying, coach. This is the last question before we go to break, coach. But, you know, as a college student, especially in upstate New York, you always hear about the cortical rivalry. And you hear about, you know, when it comes to the social scene, like the pre-games before. I'm going to be honest with you, coach. I hear about it. You know, the pre-games before, and just overall, like, how crazy that day is. And even looking at the games too, like, there's a lot of high level players on the field, man, that you see when you watch the Cortico games. So I just want to hear, like, what does that rivalry look like for you, and how do you get your guys, like, mentally prepared and also physically prepared for that week?
Yeah. It's so much fun, honestly. It's like a competitor's dream, because there's so much buzz around it. Both schools, the alumni bases, like, everyone comes back. You know, our alumni tickets just went on sale this week and sold out in record time. You know, it'll be a packed house, standing room only. Like, when you pull on, so I've coached three Corticas. I coached one at my first year. We were at home. Second year was at Yankee Stadium in front of 41,000 people. And then last year was at Ithaca. So I've kind of had all the experiences. At home, it's crazy. Like, you pull onto campus, like, the game's at noon, so I would get here around 7:30, and, you know, campus is already packed, buzzing, cars all over, tailgates going. You know, our downtown area has watch parties. Like, you know, the streets are packed, the bars are open at 6 a.m. It really is. It's a lot of fun. And we embrace, you got to embrace that part of it. Like, that's why kids come to Cortland. That's why students come to Cortland. You know, you, if we walked in our dining hall right now, there's someone with a Cortica Jug sweatshirt on, guaranteed, not an athlete. Just, you know, there's people all over campus that athletics is important to Cortland. So that's, it's fun. It just makes the game, you know, makes the game cool. When you go into the bookstore and there's a whole section of gear, not just for athletics, but there's just a Cortica section where there's like, you know, all this merchandise just branded for Cortica. You know, that's cool. And it makes me proud to be the head coach here. And it's a crazy, you know, so just the scene is crazy. Like last year at Ithaca, we take the field an hour before kickoff for a pregame warm-up. And this is just like the quarterbacks, the punters and kickers, the long snappers, just like the specialists. And you walk down the road at Ithaca to their stadium, and the stands are completely packed at 11 a.m. because there's, once you go in, you can't go out, and you have to get in early to get a good seat. So it's like you take the field, half the stadium is screaming, you know, curse words at you, and the other half is, you know, cheering for us. It's just it's a really great atmosphere. Playing in the game, the thing about Cortica that I've learned over the years is that you don't need to get the players pumped up to play. You got to get them calmed down to play. Mm. You know, they will be pumped up to play. There's really no other choice.
Yeah.
And this is why they came here to play in this rivalry. The key is to keep them, you know, to bring them down so they can execute. Because the goal, winning the game, is a lot more fun than losing. So you got to play to win. And it's like every game is like this, you know. It could be like, you know, every 3-yard run is like half the stadium is going ballistic. And because they're probably shit faced up there half of them, or they're an alum that like really cares. So every play, there's no like 3-yard game where it's just dead silent and everyone's waiting for a touchdown. Every single play, half the stadium is going nuts, the other half of the stadium is dead quiet. So it's really unlike anything I had ever faced before. It's so much fun, and it's great. It helps recruit too, honestly. You know, like playing in Cortica. You know, I don't know when we'll play in another big stadium, but I would imagine would be in the next few years. Like, you know, there's small Division I schools in the Northeast that they'll never play in front of 40,000 fans. 100%. Unless they're going to play someplace to get killed, you know, by Syracuse or something like that. Like, they're never going to play in front of 40,000. So it's special and unique.
Yeah. So you're 2-1 in the Cortica, right? Do you have any like outstanding memories like from any of those games?
Oh yeah, definitely. The first year in 2021, we were down 14 points going into the fourth quarter and scored, or 13 points. And we scored 2 touchdowns to take the lead by 1, and then Ithaca drove down the field and we blocked the field goal with like, there was probably a minute left. They were kicking a field goal to go ahead. And we had a 6'7" offensive tackle that was on field goal block, and he went up and blocked the kick. And like that stadium, the sound in the stadium was unlike anything I had ever heard. Louder than Yankee Stadium. That was louder than Yankee Stadium. Blocked the kick, and like, it was chaos. It was crazy. That's a great, great, great memory.
Yeah, that's tough. And Ruta and I, we're trying to get to Cortica this year. So
I was going to bring it up. I was like, we might have to go, bro.
But stay with us. We're going to take a quick break and talk about this year's run to the national championship. All right, we're back. Coach, so obviously you guys won the national championship this year. And when I talked to Cole Burgess on the podcast, he was saying, like, basically as soon as you guys started going live in, like, training camp, he knew that, like, there was something special with the few transfer additions you had at linebacker and, like, just the energy in training camp, he kind of could tell there was something special.
I knew early. I knew in camp because the offense, I knew the offense. I knew what we had. We were dominant years before, and we were going to be dominant again this year or the last season. And we got transfers. We got 2 transfer linebackers from Nassau, Jack Winey and Jaden Martinez. And I remember watching those two in practice, and I was just like, yo, these are the guys.
So I want to hear from you. Like, you got guys going to the NFL from that team. You got Zach Boyce. You got a stud defense, all conference players. When did you, like, start to see something special with that group?
Well, definitely you could tell we had some talented guys. Like, when our linebackers, you know, Jack Winey and Jaden Martinez, like, those were transfer guys for us. So, you know, once we've realized they were going to be stud players, I knew what we were going to have on offense. And training camp was physical. Cole was right on that. And it was really though, when we lost to Susquehanna and we lost the game that, you know, we had a 2-touchdown lead and did everything we could do to lose it. And they made some good plays too. But it was the response to that game. Like we came back after that and it was really Cole was a great leader for our team. And he gave a great speech on the field after the Susquehanna game about it being a fork in the road. And like, we can go two ways. We can either sulk in the loss and get worse, or we can, you know, use it to get better. And the team chose, we have a lot of great leaders on our team, Cole being one of them last year. So we got a lot better. And then we just got rolling at the right time. And we just started playing together. Honestly, you know, when we started playing our best is when, you know, going into the Broggerly, the Brockport game, that game was the last game of the Empire 8 season. Neither team had lost an Empire 8 game. So whoever won that game was going to be NCAA tournament bound. We had already lost the game to Susquehanna and we had Cortica the next week. So lost any of those games, we probably wouldn't have been, or if we lost to Brockport, we probably would not have gotten into the NCAA tournament. So like from then on, it was just about the guys really embraced, like, it doesn't have to be pretty. We got to do the hard things. We got to do the tough things. We got to do the things that are going to physically hurt, but we got to do whatever we need to do to win this game. And once we took that mindset and that we didn't have to, you know, because we've been fortunate the last 2 years to win a bunch of games by a lot of points. And the problem with that is that when you don't win by a lot, people start to wonder why. Like, you can play a real good team and win by a touchdown, and people are like, wow, I was surprised you guys didn't win by more. It's like, well, that's, you know, that's not our goal. Our goal is to win. Our goal is to win the game and play as good as we can play. And so once we lost, that cold pressure just went out the door. And now it's just like, okay, we just got to win every game. We don't care the score. We would say a phrase, you only have to win by one. So our goal was just to win by one. And then, you know, ironically, we beat Grove City by 1 point in the second round, and we beat North Central by 1 point in the national championship game. But once we stopped worrying about the kind of the sexy parts of football, like the big plays, this, that, those things were going to happen. Like, but we didn't want it to be pretty. We wanted it to be ugly. We wanted to grind games out. And once we kind of got that mindset, then we started to play better and better and better. And it was kind of a freeing moment, you know. And, you know, Cortica gave us confidence. We knew we were in the NCAA tournament no matter what, but we had lost to them in Yankee Stadium the year before. And, like, losing in front of 40,000 people sucks, but, like, we woke up the next day and everything was fine. So we weren't scared. You know, we weren't scared to lose. We were just ready to go play. And we got on a roll. We certainly had the talent, you know. But really, you never know. Playing a team like North Central, no one has beaten them. No one from the Northeast has been to the Stag Bowl since 1999. That was Rowan. No team from New York since 1991 in Ithaca. So we were there, and, like, our team wasn't scared at all. But you really didn't know. You know, we knew we were good, but North Central, just like, it was almost like this mythical program that killing everybody. And you know, they're just Division III players. Like, they didn't get a full scholarship to Michigan either. You know, they're playing Division III football, but you don't know how good they are. And you know, our guys were just willing to go out there and lay it all on the line. So I knew we had a talented group early. We knew we were going to be good, but you don't really know if you can win at all, because you don't know what a team like North Central is like. And now we do. So it's, you know, we kind of know what to expect now.
It's kind of interesting. Like, it seems like you guys were just taking it one play at a time, one down at a time. Like, yep. Right. Just let's just win the day almost. Yep. And like, looking at, like, your playoff run, like, you guys played some dogs. Like, I'm not going to lie. Like, I know about Endicott. Like, Endicott is a really good football program. And I remember, like I said, I go to Utica now. So I'm going to school in upstate New York. So I'm tuned into, damn, Cortland's in the NCAA tournament. Like, let's see what a team from upstate can do. And you guys beat Endicott. Grove City, I know, is a really good program. They smacked up on Utica. No shade to Utica, but they smacked up on Utica a couple years ago in a bowl game. Randolph-Macon is a really good, has a really good just overall athletic program, right? So you guys had a crazy run. So I'm just kind of wondering, you talked about it a little bit, but just some of your memories, like, in the locker room with the guys on the field, like, from that playoff run.
Yeah. yeah, it was really, you know, we started, we were so banged up after Cortica too. So we played in the Endicott game, and I think we started three offensive linemen that were making their first start. And we found a way to win. And then once we won that game, and then we learned on the field that Grove City had upset Susquehanna. So Susquehanna was going to be our second round game, we thought. And then they got upset. So, and then we were playing at home. So that kind of gave us a shot of life. And then we went for two at the end of that game to take the lead by one and won that game. And so now, you know, then we had to go to Alma. So like the memories, I think about the memories from this, not only winning the national championship, but you know, we have to go play at Alma in Michigan. And I chose not to fly. We chose to take a bus, and we left on Thursday, and we practiced. We stayed in Ohio the first night. Second day on Friday, we went to University of Michigan. We practiced at the University of Michigan, got a tour of the big house, practiced in their indoor facility. Like memories, we went on you know, the kind of trip that guys would remember their whole lives, the rest of their lives. So like those memories. And then that game, so that game was the game that Portland's had football for 100, now at that point, 118 years. No team had ever reached the national quarterfinal. So if we beat, or the national semifinal. So if we beat Alma, we'd be the best team in Portland history. And so that was kind of our calling card for that 1 week. And that was after the game on the field, like that was the deal, was we were the best team in Portland history. And from there, it was like, now we get to go play on ESPN against Randolph-Macon. That we played the best. That was the best game we played. National championship game aside, Randolph-Macon, like we were cooking on all cylinders.
It was like 35-0 at the half.
At half, yeah. Yeah. We were, our defensive line was unblockable that game, and Zach was on fire. Our offense was clicking. That was like, I did not see that game going that way at all. I thought we could win the game. I thought we would win the game, but I did not see 35-0. So that was crazy, and credit to our player. Our players just didn't blink. They were just laser focused. And then, you know, all of a sudden there's a realization that we're going to go play for the national championship. It's cool.
Crazy story and season. And about that Randolph game, you didn't even mention that Cole Burgess had three tutties in the first half too.
He did. Yeah, Cole was on fire that day. And he and JJ Lapp, they had such an effect on the other one, especially with our running game too. Like we were so hard to defend because like that game, so they chose to double JJ every play. Mm. So Cole had single coverage the whole game in the slot on the outside. So it was like, in some games it goes the other way. And they knew, like they went to the game and they could see the game plan. And like they knew that, okay, like JJ's gonna get one-on-one all game. A lot of the throws are going to go there. In that game, it was the other way. They rotated to safety, and so Cole was, you know, he had a lot of great matchups and great looks, and you know, Zach can deliver the ball. That was a fun game. And Randolph-Macon's a beautiful campus and a great place to play too. Like their athletic department, like you mentioned, is, you know, top of the line. So that was a cool atmosphere. And we had lost to them in the first round the year before in the NCAA tournament. So there was a little bit of a revenge factor there too.
Chip on the shoulder.
Yeah.
OD, but you talked about how that's a fun game, and then you moved to the national championship. We got North Central coming. They're coming off of a national championship the prior year. Mm-hmm. So they're defending their chip, and it was a 7-3 game at half, and then the final ends up being 38-37. And yeah, in the second half, like watching it was like so many nerves, like just from me watching it, like back and forth, every offense is scoring whenever they want. It was a crazy game. So I just want to hear from you, like, the emotions during that game. And then also what people should know is Cortland got the stop on the two-point conversion. But what most people don't know is you actually called a timeout, like, right before their initial snap. And me and Cole were talking about this. We both think that they were going to score that tutty on the initial play. So mm-hmm. I just want to hear also, like, your thought process on calling that two-point timeout, and then like what changes you made during that timeout.
Yeah. Yep. So the game itself was you know, going through the game. So the first half, our defense played so good in the first half. It's kind of a bend but don't break style. I mean, North Central, they have so many good players. The quarter led by the quarterback. they present a lot of challenges that our team presented to the other team, to the, you know, a quarterback that's mobile and can make any throw, a great running game. Their offensive line is unreal. Their offensive line is like an FCS caliber offensive line.
Wow.
And then they had, you know, receivers that were, you know, D'Angelo Hardy was an NFL signee. They had some guys that could really go on the outside. So our defense, like, just being able to, they gave up yards, but we didn't give up a lot of points. And so, you know, there were a lot of long drives in the first half. They had some that ended in no points. We had a drive, our second drive of the game. We went for it on fourth and goal at the 3-yard line, got stuffed. So it was kind of like just back and forth, but both offenses were going to find their footing eventually. So I think in the first half, we had first drive, we got a couple first downs and then had to punt. Second drive, we went all the way down, got stuffed on fourth and goal. Our third drive was the 2-minute drill before halftime, and we kicked the field goal. So we really only had the ball 3 times, and it was already halftime, but we felt like 7-3, and we were getting the ball to start the third quarter, that we were in a good spot. You know, I talked a little bit about the Cole's suggestions at halftime and stuff. Like, our whole team was very, very problem solving. They were like, we were in a very like focused mindset and just focused on like how we can play the second half to win the game. And really, when you're in that moment, like, I'd never been there before, but you're at halftime, there's no tomorrow, there's no next game. Like, you have 30 more minutes and this team's never going to be together again. So like, you got no choice but to just lay it all out there. You know, the season's over in 30 minutes, no matter what. So, you know, there was a belief that we could get it done. And then we scored to start the third quarter. And once we took the lead, the mindset of our team on the sideline, Cole, Zach, JJ, Jaden Alfano, St. John, all of our offensive skill players were like, we're ahead 10-7. If they score, even if they score every drive that they have the ball, if we score every drive we have the ball, then we're going to win. And so that was their mindset. And that's basically what happened. So then the 2-point conversion. So that's a strategy we used against Endicott too. Not for a 2-point play, but Endicott had fourth and they had one play to win the game on us from like the 15-yard line or something. Mm-hmm. And right before the snap of the ball, I used a timeout there too. And really the theory is you just want to see what style of play they're going to run. So like Endicott in that game, I call a timeout, the ball gets snapped, and I can see their receivers coming off the ball. Their quarterback starts to take a straight drop back. So now we know like what, okay, they're trying to throw a drop back pass, because we didn't know their quarterback was mobile. So we didn't know like, are they going to sprint out? Are they going to, you know, what type of play are they going to run so we can prepare our defense? And so it was kind of the same thing. And that 2-point conversion was I told the official what I was going to do. I said, I'm going to call a timeout as close to the snap of the ball as I can, but I will call it before he snaps it. So that's what I told the ref. So then we get down there and you get a feel for their cadence throughout the game as a coach, just like a D lineman would get a feel for their cadence or whatever. So raise it before they snap, we called the timeout. The referee knew what was going to happen, so he was able to blow it dead. And then you could see what they were doing. They were going to sprint out and run like a pick play to try to get their stud receiver Hardy open in the corner of the end zone. And we had man coverage called. And so like we would have been close on the coverage, I think. And we had a blitz right in the quarterback's face, but he was good. And I agree with Cole. I thought they had a really good chance on that with the defense we had called and the players that they have. I thought they had a really good chance on that play. But once they showed it, they weren't going to run it again. So, you know, because they're thinking, well, they saw what we were going to run. We got to do something else. So, and I'm an offensive coach. On my call sheet, I have 2-point plays. You know, I have like however many for a given week, 1, 2, 3. And the best one is on top. And you have a plan. Like, if we get 2-point play, I'm calling this play right here. If we need 2 of them, then I'll call the second, then the third. So we basically just wanted them to burn their first one. Mm-hmm. And I wanted our guys to see what they were going to do so then we could calm down. So over the timeout, you know, we knew basically the conversation was, okay, they were going to run sprint out pick. So if they're going to run that play, we can defend that play. We called a different defense. So instead of running a blitz man coverage, we played zone coverage. So that kind of reshifted where our defenders were kind of distributed. And then, so we were in a much, if they had called the second play first, they would have scored on that quarterback outside zone. I think they would have had the angles. But because our defensive coordinator, and credit to Coach Cushing, he didn't want it, knowing what they were trying to do, being in man wasn't the greatest. If they're going to throw, we wanted to be more in a zone. And but then they ended up running the quarterback outside zone, and our guys made a great play. Freshman, we had a freshman corner, Naz Gene Lubin from Freeport, you know, made the tackle, and the rest. I was panicked out after that because our hands team had to go out and recover.
That's super crazy. I definitely was happy for you when you guys got that dub. And this is just like a quick question, but like, you can obviously tell you have a lot of football knowledge and you just won a national championship. How did kind of like life change for you? I know you said you're not like the biggest fan of Division I football, mm-hmm. but like, was that an option after that championship, or how did recruiting change? Like, were people more eager to come to Cortland after that? Talk to me about like,
recruiting definitely changed. Not like by the time you get to December, you kind of have the recruits that you're recruiting kind of in, they're already in the, like, we already had the guys on our board, and it's really hard to start recruiting new guys at that point. We kind of had almost half our class already committed at that point. Where recruiting is really going to tick up is this year. Like, so now we start in spring, when we start the recruiting cycle as the national champion, it helps. You know, you're recruiting, you can start recruiting better. Like, better players are open to the conversation at the beginning of the cycle, you know. And so, you know, that's what we're hoping. We're hoping that we can get in the conversation with, you know, Preferred Walk-On at Stony Brook. You know, we hope that we become a better option, an obviously better option than some of those PWO, like some of the top-end, you know, low-end Division I guys. We want to be in the ballpark on those guys in recruiting. So, and it definitely has helped do that. And so I'm excited about the recruiting. From a personal standpoint, you know, everyone, I get that question a lot about, like, teams must have been calling. In December, the cycle, the hiring cycle is pretty much, you know, a lot of those jobs are open and closed at that point. But I'm not very interested that much in Division I. Like, I'm from Central New York. I grew up just north of Syracuse. My wife is from Tully, New York, just south of Syracuse. We live in Tully. So, like, there's a lot of being in Central New York is more than just, like, it would take more than money to move my family. I have three young kids. So, like, you know, there's a lot more to it than just salary. So and being at a school like Cortland that, you know, you have the resources to be successful, not that we will be successful every year. I don't know. Every year is different. But, you know, this is a good place to coach. So I don't take that for granted. But life is, you know, it's been fun. Honestly, it's been a lot of fun. And it just made me, winning a national championship, you'd think it like make you, you know, like satisfied, but it just made me want to go back there more. It was so much fun and such a great experience that it makes you want to do it all over again.
I mean, I definitely respect that, wanting to stay where, like, not where you're comfortable, but like that's definitely an aspect of it. Like, life is good right now. You don't got to change anything. And you talk about being successful year in and year out. I want to talk about this year's team. Like you said, the drive to get back to that spot is now even more than it ever was. So this team is currently ranked number 2 in the country behind North Central, and you guys are off to a crazy start. I mean, 3-0, averaging like north of 60 points a game. So just absolutely smacking teams. You just picked up a big win against Susquehanna, who's ranked number 12 in the country. Just talk about, you know, like, this year's roster and what you see from them.
Yeah, this year's team, it's different than last year. There's a lot of guys back, but we also lose guys like Burgess and J.J. Lapp and some other guys. So every team's a little bit different, but we have a ton of experience, a lot of guys who have played a lot, played in big games, you know, played in Cortica Jug games. So there's not a lot that these guys haven't seen. So that's fun as a coach. You know, there's nothing really. We got down 24-7 last game against Susquehanna, and these guys didn't blink. So that was impressive. I was very impressed by our team in that, their resiliency. So this is a very, a little bit of a grittier group. We're stronger on defense than we were a year ago. I really like our defense a lot. Offensively, we don't have the blazing speed at receiver, but we got some tough players, and our O-line is a lot of them. A lot of those guys are back from last year. So I feel like we're bigger and stronger up front, and we still have a great quarterback. So I like our team. We're a lot more well-rounded. Very consistent from offense, defense, special teams. We're a very, very well-rounded team. So, you know, I feel like we have a chance to be good. We've just got to be hungry to get better every week. You know, that's really, like I told us, our team on the bye week, we can't be the same team in week 11 that we were walking off the field at Susquehanna. We have mm-hmm. to, we have to be a better version. And so, you know, you do that one week at a time. So it's a little bit of a coaching cliche, but it is true. Like, if we think we're at the mountaintop, we're not going to climb anymore. So we've got to stay humble and be hungry about our approach and how we prepare each week.
It's kind of interesting, when you talk to other championship coaches, and not me myself, more so like hearing other interviews, you just hear like all these coaches always talk about like, yeah, you know, when I get to that championship, obviously it's fun in the moment, but in that mountaintop, it's sometimes not everything you expect, like, because then you want the next one.
Yeah.
Right. So definitely understand and empathize with what you're saying, Coach, 100%. And I know, you know, with you at the helm and also Zach Boyd is the quarterback and all the players that you guys have this year, you guys would be right back in where you need to be. But, you know, this is going to wrap it up, Coach. And, you know, it's been an interesting conversation just about Division III football, Cortland football especially, but you know, a lot of the times with Division III, and I know through conversations with KJ and also different coaches at Utica, like you see a lot of complacency sometimes within Division III. Like mm-hmm. teams are okay, or programs are okay with being just like average.
Yeah.
And I don't get the sense from talking to you, but also Coach Axel and any one of the coaches at Cortland, like you guys as a program don't have that mindset. Like all you guys want to win. But obviously, Cortland, you guys are in a different echelon. Like you have won. You are technically like the top of your class when it comes to coaching. Like you're national champion. So I want you to help the viewers and also us understand like what about Cortland football separates you guys from any other program around the country? Division I, Division II, Division III.
I don't know if it's anything we do special. I think we have really good kids here. I think we have a great university that. Our players like to go to they like attending school here. You know, that's a huge factor. You know, if our kids were just here because of football, and if it wasn't for football, they'd be gone someplace else. That makes it very hard because the minute you face adversity, everyone's looking to leave. Everyone's looking for their own, looking out for themselves. And so I'm fortunate that you know, I don't know, you know, there's probably a lot of coaches that could do a great job at Cortland. I think it's that type of place. You know, going back to like complacency, I think like everyone's definition of good is different.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, everyone's definition of good is different. And
that's true.
And I can relate to that. You know, now my definition of good is different than it was 2-3 years ago, even, you know, yeah. When I first got to Cortland, they hadn't been doing it. Those players in 2021 had never won the Empire Eight, had never been to the NCAA playoffs. I had never coached an NCAA playoff game as a coach. And so when we made it to the NCAA tournament and we got to the Sweet 16 that first year, and it was like, wow, like you thought you were at the mountaintop, honestly, you know?
Yeah.
And that's why when I say we play in North Central, like their definition of excellence is different than what ours was. And now we've kind of like, raise the bar in a way of our own bar, not to people outside our program, but and I think yeah. At Cortland, like that's not just football; it's a lot of other program. A lot of the other coaches have the same because that's the expectation. Like I love that. I want an AD. I want an AD to say we expect you to win at the highest level because that's what I want. Like okay, good. That's what I want too. Let's go do that. So Cortland has made me better. I think you know just. Striving for excellence. There's probably other schools that have that same thing. So I don't know if we're better or worse than other places, but I know that's a strength of our university as a whole, and then our athletic department, and then down to our football program is that you know we want to be great. We want to be held to a high standard. And you know if you're a great athlete or a great coach, like that's what you're searching for a place like that.
Yeah. I mean, we talked about the AD earlier, but shout out to Mike Ertz. He's definitely got something special at Cortland University. So definitely going to keep looking forward to Cortland games. We're going to be locked in. rooting for the best for you guys, but we're going to end this episode with a little rapid fire and lineup edition. So let us know you're ready for rapid fire.
Sounds good.
All right. So first rapid fire question we got, Coach. Funniest players, Coach, and you got to pick one from each team that you've been a part of.
Funniest player or funniest coach?
Funniest players that you coached.
Funniest players. Funniest player at Utica. When I was coaching at Utica, I would say funniest player. Whew.
That's way back.
Way back. I'd say Anthony Acevedo was funny in his own way. He was a stud player too. At Morrisville, I would say Josh Powell was a wide receiver. He was a character. At Cortland, funniest player. Ooh. It's not Burgess, even though he would probably think he would probably think it would be him. Let's see here. I'd say the old lineman that blocked that field goal, Travis Alvarez. He was a quirky guy.
What? This is just like a side. This is a side thing I'm thinking about. But how is it for you, like now as a coach, like to see your players like pursuing their dreams of going to the NFL? Like, I'm just kind of curious about that.
It's awesome. Yeah, it's awesome. So proud of Cole, and when Cole and JJ were in preseason, just following their journeys and like keeping up on how they're doing at practice and all that. You know, JJ scored a huge touchdown to win a preseason game, and Stetson Bennett throwing him a touchdown pass. Yeah. It's cool. You know, Cole. He's going to get his shot at some point, and it's awesome. Like my middle child, our son Oliver, just turned 5 the other day, and one of his birthday presents was a Cole Burgess 17 Cincinnati Bengals jersey. So he'll be wearing that out. Oliver will be wearing that out to the tailgate. Cole was fired up when I sent him that picture.
That's fine.
So it's a lot of pride. I mean, it's awesome. It's awesome. I mean, the courage they have to go do that, like represent Cortland, represent them, their families, and our program on the highest level. And Cole will make it too. He will. He's that type of person. He's an eternal optimist. Minute he gets in a game, he's going to score a touchdown, and I wouldn't be surprised if he's not an all pro, you know, 4 or 5 years from now. He's got that. He's a bulldog. His mentality. He's got a different mentality than anyone I've ever coached. So if he sets his mind to it, he will do it.
Yeah. One thing I wanted to mention, like, we know about the situation of him having to leave school, and you could see that like mindset, like he was already writing like that in his notebook, seeing that like we're going to win the national championship. Yeah, his vision board.
Yeah,
winning the national championship. I'm going to do this. Like, you could definitely see that, and I definitely respect you saying he could be all pro, because I agree with you.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, he's got a different, like, I tried to tell all the scouts that came in, like, he's not just a good Division III player. This kid, like, you can't get him off the practice field. Mm-hmm. You know, he take 10 reps in a row. He'll run 10 deep balls in a row. And like, you can see him tired. He will not tap himself out. He's just built different. He's physically gifted human being too, but his mindset is just, you know, even when he makes a mistake, he just has blinders on. He just like, and it, you know, he gets better. He wants to be coached. You can coach him hard. He doesn't get, you know, you can yell at him and he won't get, you know, he won't sulk about it. He just like, he's like Teflon. He just keeps going. So he's a special kid.
Shout out to Cole and JJ. We're definitely rooting for both those guys for sure. Definitely at Division III players. So next rapid fire question. You kind of brought this up with Utica, but I'm kind of interested to hear. I want you to rank the schools that you've been at in terms of like the food in the area.
It's a good one.
Oh, Utica is number one for sure.
Fisher included as well.
Fisher included. Actually, hang on a second. Time out. Fisher's one because garbage plate is elite.
did Cook say that to us?
Yeah, we did. Yeah.
Yeah. The garbage plate is elite. And then I would say Utica and then Cortland and Morrisville.
Okay.
The garbage plate takes it right there.
That's what we talked to some basketball player from St. John's Fisher, and he said the same exact thing. Like, the garbage plate is crazy. I've never heard of that, but I got to try it, I guess.
There's nothing better at 2 a.m. than the garbage
plate. And then last rapid fire question we got for you, Coach. So sometimes like players will have like pregame music that they listen to before they take the field. So I'm kind of wondering if you have some like that, like, or pregame routine or anything like that.
I don't listen to any music.
Yeah.
Other than like what's on in the locker room that the players are playing. I have no idea. Like, you know what? I don't listen to any music. So we have a meal, pregame breakfast. We talk, if it's a home game, we talk to recruits. And then we go out to the stadium for our meetings. And I don't listen to anything.
Just so, chilling, locked
yeah,
in.
Yeah, hang out, talk to the players and get ready to go. So it's probably, you know, it's a boring thing, but, you know, I study the call sheet, stuff like that.
Yeah. I know we've had you for a while here, Coach. This is going to be the last thing. We're going to move to the lineup edition. So if you're a coach or if you're a quarterback assembling your lineup, your ideal lineup, and this could be from like your Fisher experience all the way to where you are right now, you're building this lineup. You get a team offensive line, two receivers, a tight end, and a running back. Who are you picking if you're the quarterback?
Thinking back, this is hard now.
That's really hard. Shout out Ruda for this one too, because he gave me this idea.
Okay. on the O-line, oh man, there's some great ones. The right tackle we have here at Cortland right now, Cody Eike, is an all-timer.
No, you got it. You got to pick just the team.
The team?
Yeah. Like a specific, like 23 Cortland roster, line.
Yeah, okay. O-line, I'll take the 2014 Morrisville team. That O-line was some ballers. Receivers, I would take 2023 Cortland with Lapp and Burgess and Iadibio. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Running back?
Tight end and running back, yeah.
Tight end, I would take Utica 2012-11 Matt Dunn.
Matt Dunn, heard.
He's a stud. Running back. I would probably take I like the group we got right now, Cortland. With Gallo and Tyson Taylor has been banged up. No one's really seen him yet. And then Alfonso St. John is now a receiver, but he'll run the ball a bunch
as a season. Alfonso St. John is tough.
Yeah, so we have three guys that are legit right now.
That's fire, Coach. Well, that's going to do it for another episode of Not Even D2. This has been a wonderful conversation with you. Like I said, we're locked in for Cortland football this year. Good luck to you and the team going forward.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate you having me. Nice job.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Not Even D2.
Make sure you subscribe. Make sure you follow us on Instagram, Twitter. That's the best way to support the channel.
And all episodes released on iHeartRadio, Pandora, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcasts. That's going to do it. And we'll see you next week on Thursday.
Yo, bro, that was a fire episode.
OD.